Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, the candy cane schedule has been posted. Make some holiday apple treats at home, a new pre-show for World of Color,
new holiday decor for the hotels, two milestone anniversaries, Mickey and Minnie turn 95, we talk to author Bambi Moe, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome aboard the DL Weekly podcast. Please, lower your head and watch your step while boarding. If this is your first time listening, we hope you'll check out our website at dlweekly.net. If you have more time to spend, becoming an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support is an especially good value. Thanks for traveling with us today, and we hope you have a happy and memorable listen to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 22nd, 2023. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank all of our current weekly tiers, including Jean B., Michael C., Shannon C., and Aaron S. for supporting the show. Your support ensures that the podcast will continue and that we can make it to the parks more often to bring you the latest news and information right from the parks. If you'd like to become an official weekly tier, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
In episode 222, we spoke to Debbie and Steve with Designer Park Company about their rope drop bag that was launching, and they've launched a bunch of new designs,
yes,
and they've got some other stuff coming out soon, so they've got a lot going on. I subscribe to their newsletter where they always talk about their new stuff that they have, but if you've been wanting to get one of these parkgoer bags for yourself, and with the holidays coming up, maybe you know somebody who would like one of these bags, you can use our promo code DLWeekly to get 10% off your purchase at designerparkco.com.
Well, with the holidays quickly approaching, we will be sending out postcards again this year to all of our supporters from the Park Hopper level and above. If you are currently a supporter on Patreon, please log in and make sure your address is up to date so you get your card. If you would like to get a postcard from us, you can go ahead and sign up and become an official weekly tier at dlweekly.net/support.
Now let's get to the news.
The seasonal tradition of handmade candy canes is upon us. Disneyland has released their schedule for selling them this year at the Candy Palace in Disneyland and Trolley Treats in Disney California Adventure. Starting in December, the Candy Palace, again that's Disneyland, will have them on the 3rd, 5th, 10th, 12th, 17th, 19th, and 24th. Trolley Treats over in DCA will have them on alternate days, so they will begin with December 4th, 6th, 11th, 13th, 18th, and 20th. And finally, Christmas Day. In the past, they have been $19.99 each with a limit of one per guest per day.
I don't really have anything to say about this. I will let you talk about your enjoyment of the candy canes.
This was something that was on both of our Disney bucket lists that we got to cross off in 2021. And we've just been very, very fortunate because the past 2 years that we have been to the parks for the holiday time have been reservation required times. And it just so happened that we had our reservations already secured for the park and then the candy cane schedule release, and it just lined up perfectly with our reservations. And so it happened again, year three, we had our reservations. They're lining up again with we're starting in the correct parks for the candy canes. So this year, Teg's kind of he's not a big fan of the candy canes. I enjoy them. I think they're fun and they're festive and they are different, but I really want to make sure to get one and grab one this year because when we're in the parks, part of my family, my parents, and then part of my extended family will all be there, and it'll be their first ever time experiencing Disneyland during the holidays. So I want to try and snag a candy cane for all of them to try.
Yeah. They're cool looking. I like the way, I like the pomp and circumstance that goes with all of the making of them and stuff like that. I just, for me, I feel like it's more time than I want to put towards it. Like, the payoff for me is not there.
See,
so.
I think for me, I have the opposite thought because I put it as this much crazy, like, I thought it was like close to near impossible to try and get. And I tell you, that first year, the first day that we were trying to do it in Disneyland, it was nuts. But we did our little candy cane shuffle from the gate back to the Candy Palace, and that was a little chaotic. But ever since that time, it's gone smoother and smoother. In fact, last year when we did it, I want to say we waited in the actual queue to get signed up for maybe 30 minutes. And then it was an hour later, I got a text message saying that the candy cane was available to be picked up. So it was way more efficient. I do think there's something about when you're going. Like, if you're going towards the start of candy cane season versus the middle and end, I think the first time we did it was towards the start. So I think people were a little bit more like, ah, because it was the beginning. Whereas maybe towards the middle and the end, there's not quite the same demand or same volume of people going.
I just feel like
I could be totally
this is kind of so we don't have this happen anymore. But for a while there, the first thing we had to do when we entered the park was always get a coffee. And I'm like, I want to go do something else. Yep. And so this is just another one of those like, well, this is another thing that has to be done right at the beginning.
Yep.
Where that prime time to like go experiencing that have longer lines in the day is taken up. And I just don't think, for me, the candy cane's worth it. I do think it's worth, if people are excited about it, it's worth doing it once. I just don't, I mean, we've done it twice now. I don't feel like I need to do it anymore. Well, Disney has some great eats and treats for the holidays, and the Disney Parks blog wants you to be able to make some at home. This time, they're focusing on apples. The holiday apple tart, the apple butter cake, the apple tart-a-tin, apple butter, and an apple pie cocktail are all at the link in our show notes.
These look so yummy. So some of these are current recipes that you can find in, at any of the, some of the resorts. And then, so like the first one right there, the holiday apple tart is actually from Disneyland at the Tomorrowland Skyline Terrace. But some of these other recipes are from the Disney Recipe Vault, which did you know? I didn't know there was a Disney Recipe Vault. Of course there's a Disney Recipe Vault. But
the two that are from the vault sound really good, though. The apple butter cake and apple butter.
Yeah. These are things, if I didn't already have my menu set for what we're doing for the holiday this week, I would, yeah, these, I want to try these. I really do. Maybe sometime between now and the end of the year.
This sounds really good.
It's, yeah. Maybe that can be like a bonus episode. We can bring back like
cooking,
the cooking, oh, where you and I try recreating recipes.
As long as we don't freak my neighbor out again.
Where you try and recreate recipes from the park.
I would love to make this apple butter recipe. Yes. It doesn't look like it's too terribly difficult. Mm-mm. Anyway, very exciting. Yum. Obviously, with this week being Thanksgiving, if you celebrate, happy Thanksgiving to all of you listeners out there. And maybe this will be some fun food that you can add to that.
Mm-hmm. World of Color Season of Light is back for the holidays, but this time with a new limited time short before the show. The short highlights the story from Disney's new animated movie, Wish. The show runs for about 4 minutes right before the regular World of Color show begins.
See, I like that they do these synergistic tie-in things, and something as easy as throwing in a few extra minutes before World of Color, I think that's great. I feel like something like World of Color is easy enough for them to be able to add and change and do these little things.
Yeah.
Almost as good as like the Bruno show and on It's a Small World's facade. Like these things are not too bad, and it makes it, you know, you might have seen World of Color Season of Light before, but now you have like another reason to go see it if you want to see this thing. Plus it promotes the movie really well. So yeah, it should be great.
I agree. I think it's so fun.
While the holidays have been moving into the parks for some time now, there are new decorations up in the hotels and in Downtown Disney. The Disneyland Hotel has gone for a mid-century modern look with whimsical decorations reminiscent of It's a Small World. It will snow in Downtown Disney around the big tree that is located near the Jazz Kitchen and Splitsville every half hour from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And, of course, the Gingerbread House has returned to the Grand Californian as well.
I really, really, really want to go do a tour of the hotels again when we're there for the holidays. There's something about the style and the decor that they've got at the Disneyland Hotel that just, it just looks, like Tag said, very fun, very whimsical.
They're really buying into mid-century modern, which I'm here for.
I really like it. There's like multiple trees. It's not like there's just one tree that's decorated. There's a sleigh full of presents. There's different window clings on like the doors and all this stuff. It just looks super cool. There's lighting outside. I think I even saw that the Disneyland Hotel sign, like up at the road, even has, it looks like snow has fallen on it. They really have gotten into this. This is very fun, very cool. And plus, I mean, snow in Downtown Disney, that's a fun little magic moment to have outside of the parks.
Absolutely. I love the Disneyland Hotel. It looks beautiful. And I hope we have time to make it over there.
Well, two iconic parts of Disneyland have recently celebrated a milestone anniversary. The Main Street Fire Engine has been delighting guests and even Walt himself for 65 years. In fact, the last photo of Walt in Disneyland was with him and Mickey on the fire engine. Steve Dinley, the cast member who's normally seen driving the iconic vehicle, is celebrating 50 years at Disneyland. Steve started as a utility man in the Tomorrowland Terrace restaurant, then moved to Tomorrowland Attractions before landing on Main Street in 1984. So that means he's been driving that fire engine
for almost 40 years. Yeah. I think it's amazing because there's not many attractions at Disneyland that you associate a cast member with. Mm-hmm. I mean, we used to have Maynard with the Haunted Mansion and then Maynard with the Tiki Room. Yep. Apparently Maynard at Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. I only saw him at the Tiki Room. But Steve is one of those people. We actually, 3 or 4 trips ago, actually got to ride the fire engine with Steve.
Yeah, and
it was really cool.
We were the only ones on it too, so we got our own private ride up Main Street with Steve. It was very fun.
Yeah, I think if you've seen the fire engine, more often than not, Steve is the one who's been driving it. So how cool that these two anniversaries line up. So it's 65 and 50 years. Like, that's just what it honors, like, to be known for something like that. I don't know. It's just, I love it.
Well, huge congratulations to Steve on his milestone of 50 years and almost 40 years with the fire engine. He is super nice. He's like the embodiment of like Disney magic.
Oh,
he's so kind, always has a smile on his face, and is just wonderful to chat with. So if you've never stopped and chatted with Steve, I highly recommend you do so.
He also, him and the fire engine, got to go to the Rose Parade as well, which is really cool. Well, even though the Walt Disney Company's 100th anniversary was not celebrated at the parks for guests, Mickey and Minnie's 95th anniversary was. Commemorative buttons, photo spots, and a birthday cavalcade helped to honor the occasion.
Did you see photos of this birthday cavalcade? I don't know what it is. There's like this little mini float that they have that's this giant, like, animated cartoon-style birthday cake, and it just makes me laugh. I don't know why. But it's just so like happy and fun and like crazy. It's like definitely was made in like the Toontown Bakery kind of style birthday cake. But I think this is so fun that they do these little celebrations to celebrate these milestone things in the park. Are we sad that they didn't do anything for the 100th anniversary of the park? Yeah, I feel like that was a huge missed opportunity. But I am glad that they did do something to celebrate Mickey and Minnie's 95th birthday.
Now, is this the outfit that they had for Mickey's 90th?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I was just curious
because
it's all that confetti and everything.
Yep.
I'm glad that
it's
it.
It's like their celebration outfits.
By the way, did you notice in the photos that Mice Chat has that it is not Steve
driving? Steve
driving
that day.
The fire engine, but
I was very happy. I really like the style of the button that they had because it's kind of more of a, it's not the current style of Mickey and Minnie, the current cartoon style. This almost reminds me of maybe something from like the 80s or 90s.
Sure.
But yeah, it's kind of more of a classic Mickey and Minnie.
I like it. I'm glad that they did something.
Well, last Friday, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge celebrated Life Day. Life Day is a holiday in the Star Wars universe for the Wookiees like Chewbacca. There is a lot of merchandise from last year and a special dessert at Docking Bay 7. We're just going to pretend that it wasn't merchandise that was dated 2022 that they had sitting out for 2023 Life Day. But they did have a special dessert at Docking Bay 7 that was sold out by the evening.
I will tell you, this dessert looked pretty good. It was called the Kashyyyk Cake. It had a brownie base, raspberry sauce, tiramisu, and dark chocolate mousse.
It does. Yeah, it sounded really good. The photos that Disney had posted to like show this off looked really appetizing. I hate to say it, the photos that I've seen of people that bought it that then took a picture of it, there were these round red discs that have kind of like gold dusting on it. For some reason, they look like pepperonis to me.
Oh, yeah.
I think because the red in like the promo photo was a deeper, richer red than what these were. It was almost more of a like, yeah, like a maroon a little bit, but yeah, that I can't. I'm sorry if I ruined that for anybody else, but they just look like it sounds delicious, but that's all I see.
Ooh, Life Day cheese branch at Katsaka's Kettle It appears to be a baked cheese breadstick dusted in spices. That could be good. Well, something out of the ordinary happened on Main Street this week, causing injury to a few guests. Due to high winds, a light pole blew over in Town Square. After the incident, Disneyland secured other similar posts around the park with cabling to stabilize the poles during high winds.
This was wild. It's one of those, I don't know, never would I think about that. But of course, why couldn't that possibly happen? Because who knows how old these light poles are. And what ended up happening is people had shared photos of the one that had fallen over. You could see that the decorative base that just kind of goes over the top, the post itself was rusted down at the base. Usually there's, you know, like it's poured into cement and then it's, you know, there's a cement base. It didn't look like there was a cement base and the grass went right up to it. So I'm sure that's probably what caused the issue. But again, not something that you would think. There were reported injuries of guests, so our thoughts go out to them. I hope that, you know, nobody was seriously injured, but I do think I saw that someone was taken to the hospital because of this. Yeah. So very scary. So hopefully everybody's okay after this incident.
Yeah. Not something I ever like considered that these poles would like fall down or something. I do commend Disneyland for going through and putting up straps almost immediately of the other things. And I'm sure that since this incident happened, I'm sure that the maintenance and administration of the park are double-checking all of the lights and will make modifications as necessary to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Well, Dream Key Magic key holders should have received an email notifying them of the class action lawsuit settlement. In the settlement, Dream Magic key holders will get a payout of $67.41 for each Dream Key. A third-party company will be contacting class members with details on how to receive their payments. Or I guess just payments, singular. I'm sure they're not breaking $67.41 into multiple payments.
Yeah. I mean, we knew this was coming, but I guess they're finally starting to actually like roll try to coordinate payments numbers. And stuff. Mm-hmm. So
if you had a Dream Key Magic Key holders, be sure to check your email to see if you got your notification. If you did not get your notification, make sure you check your spam.
Absolutely. Well, with the addition of Lightning Lane to the Little Mermaid Ariel's Undersea Adventure, the entrance has been moved from under the beautiful entrance to the other end, where most of the queue space is located. This is a much less glamorous entrance, but needed for the space required by Lightning Lane.
This has to be temporary, right? Like,
I don't think so.
It's
Lightning Lane ruins everything.
Yeah, I just feel like this has to be temporary because they should be able to split it. So that, because I'm thinking of how it usually goes. They've got to be able to split it.
Remember, that's where the exit is, too. Remember, the exit goes out that way.
But I feel like they'd be able to split it maybe past where the exit, like after you're under the dome, split it. Because when you're in the standby line, depending on how long the line is, you go past the door to then go into the maze of stuff to then go back up to the door. So I would think they'd be able, and it's usually a pretty wide space between the door. There's nothing between the door and then where the entrances, they have that whole area is blocked off.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like you'd have a very short Lightning Lane that they'd be able to split.
They must have thought that wasn't going to work.
I wonder, this is my.
You're putting
it out there in the world. I think what they're doing is they're reworking the entrance area there. So that's why for now, I feel like this has got to be temporary. For now, you're going all the way down to the end and entering what doesn't look anything like an entrance because you've already passed the entire show building, it feels like.
Right.
I think they're putting something there to make a divide.
Hmm.
I think they're installing stuff to make it. It should be able to work.
I hope so. I don't like the entrance being moved down to that other area. And honestly, I wish they just wouldn't. But, you know, whatever. It's happened.
Yes.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop starspeeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Hello there, and welcome to Trivia Land.
So, James, how do you feel about Snack Chat being built next door to Trivia Land?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a land, so it's not like it's that threatening.
Could have been Snack Land or no, Foodie Land. That was the one I had come up with.
Could have been Fantasy Fair.
Fair.
James is really excited
that
for
was
Fantasy
good.
Fair.
It was a good name.
Did I tell you about the one that we got submitted after The voting had already started?
I think you might have, but you should tell me again anyway.
Refreshment corner. Oh, like, yeah. Brilliant.
That was a really good one.
We should have, but oh well. The people so have good. Spoken. Snack chat.
Yeah.
All right.
Whatever. You know, it's good to have more company. We always talk about wanting more expansion. So, plus a few extra places to eat. Why not?
There you go.
But we're here for trivia. And so we're going to do trivia.
I mean, I'd much rather eat. Can we just eat instead of doing trivia?
Nope.
Do you want a taffy?
No, I've had enough taffy. For those of you listening, Teresa has been pumping me full of taffy since I got here today. So
I'm just waiting for the sugar rush to really kick in.
My stomach's already feeling a little upset from all the sugar. But anyway, sorry, trivia.
Let's get to the questions while you can pay attention. My first question for you this week is, where in the park can you find the home for Pfeiffer, Fiddler, and Practical?
Ooh!
Find the home?
Yep.
Well, it's on Buena Vista Street in Disney California Adventure.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the Starbucks.
Yeah.
It's the cafe.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know if that's their home or not, though.
Like, are you saying, like, something different than what we just said?
I mean, that would be me telling you the answer, wouldn't it?
Oh, well.
Is it Storybook
Land? My question says, I'm looking for the home of Pfeiffer, Fiddler, and Practical.
Okay. Is that the Three Little Pigs?
I think it's the Three Little Pigs. So I'm going to say the Storybook Land.
Canal Boats. Yeah.
All right. That one in tow. We'll move on to question.
Are we overthinking this?
We might be.
Okay.
That's the joy, right? Question number two is an audio clue for you.
Oh.
I have a short clip from an attraction. I want you to tell me which one it is. I have strong confidence in the two of you.
I mean, it sounds like Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, like the last tunnel, maybe?
It's definitely an outdoor and fast attraction. I heard water splashing.
Can you play it again?
Sure.
Okay.
There's so many noises.
It's either Big Thunder Mountain or the Matterhorn.
It might be the Matterhorn because, like, tink, tink, tink might have been like the brake.
Yeah, that's
thing.
What I'm, that's, yeah. That was what I was thinking. I was thinking the extra noises were the bouncing around.
What's tough is what you hear as wind, like on the microphone, I hear as rumbling.
Oh, I heard it as wind, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to say Big Thunder. Are you going to say Matterhorn? And then, like, one of us maybe will be, and then watch it be something totally not any of those.
Locking in different answers, both climbing a mountain. Moving on, our third question comes from listener Elise K. What year was the Sword in the Stone installed?
Ooh.
83, when they did the new Fantasyland.
Redo?
I feel like it has to be.
1983, we'll go with it.
Which I'm really sad they don't have that show anymore.
So you're saying you think it was with the Fantasyland
redo? 83, with the Fantasyland redo.
But you missed the show with it, huh?
Yeah, I do. I miss that they used to bring like kids and Merlin would come out. You know, they've got a Merlin, just have him walk over from the parade.
Merlin has his own shop in Fantasyland now. He is the star of the Magic Happens Parade.
The star, yes.
Mim hangs out in villains in like the Oogie Boogie Bash as one of the villains. We need the show back. There's a resurgence of love for Merlin and Mim, so bring back Merlin.
I love how you bring Mim into all of this.
Of course I do. Of course I do.
Teresa's just bitter because I finally got Lorcana cards this week, and I got the Dragon Mim, which is what, like a legendary, like really rare?
Yeah, it's a rare, yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't remember.
I sent Teresa the picture thinking she had this card, and she was like, what?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Anyway.
Moving on, our last question this week is a cast member costume.
Oh.
It's essentially a beige work suit. Pants with a belt, a matching colored shirt tucked in. The shirt tends to have one or more patches on it as well. If it's a little colder outside, cast members can throw a beige jacket over the top of it. And if it's sunny, some aviator sunglasses make the look.
Oh, Soarin'.
It's kind of Soarin', yeah.
Originally, I was thinking
the canoes originally.
Oh, that would have been a good one, too. But no, I was thinking Jungle Cruise originally.
Oh.
But But
if it wasn't for the aviators, we would have been going back and forth, I think.
Well, he said like a jumpsuit?
Yeah, it's essentially like a beige work suit.
Yeah, so that was making me also think like Soarin' or something. Because
All right, that wraps up this week's trivia questions. How do you think TNT did? How'd you do at home? No, we're just a discussion topic away from the answers.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are talking with, wait for this title, this is kind of crazy, the former Disney music executive, which actually was the VP of music was the official title, at Walt Disney Television Animation, mm-hmm. and more importantly now, the author of the book Part of the Magic, a collection of Disney-inspired brushes with greatness. You're not going to believe the name here, folks. Bambi Moe. Welcome to the show, Bambi.
Thanks so much. What a great introduction.
Well, talking about Disney with a name like Bambi, like,
I know. People, you know, that's a big part of this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my given name, but that is something, the first thing people ask me, did you change your name to work at Disney? And I said, no, do people do that?
You never know, right? You never know. Well, we are excited.
I will tell you something funny about the name, though, mm-hmm. being Bambi. I worked with a woman named Winnie, and my boss's wife was named Wendy.
Oh,
so it was like we were So anyway,
the Disney gals hanging out together.
The Disney gals, all of them.
I love it. Well, Bambi, we are so excited to chat with you. Just so everyone listening knows, we actually met Bambi at the most recent Disney Anna event. She presented and showed off her book. We purchased our own copy. I've got it right here. But we're just so excited because your career and all of the different brushes that you've had with Disney throughout your life is just really, really incredible. And we're so excited to chat with you more about it.
Thanks. I feel very fortunate and I am so unbelievably grateful for having had those experiences. And I just, it's really kind of been fun for me to revisit them and share them with everybody.
Well, to kick us off, how about you tell us a little bit about your Disney story? So this will just be what kind of got you interested in Disney and or Disneyland.
Well, you know, I have to kind of give, really, I'm going to give 100% credit to my mom. Yeah. Okay. My mom grew up during the Depression and she was a Depression kid, and there wasn't a lot of joy and, you know, as a kid, but Mickey Mouse and all things Disney kind of represented that to her. And she really carried that through her whole life, you know, as a kid and then as a teenager and as a young woman. So, you know, having had her own daughter, because I asked her this many, many times. I said, did you name me Bambi because of Bambi? And she said, oh, no, 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 no. She said, if I was going to name you anything, it would have been Mickey. So that really is where my love of all things Disney came from. It was from my mom. But, you know, I, as a young Disney executive, I think one of my, I can't even tell you, it is probably one of the greatest moments that I could say that I ever had at Disneyland was when I was a young Disney executive and I was part of something that's called Disney. It was called Disney Way. Mm. And basically what it was a 3-day intensive, and I don't want to say training, but it was like a training where you'd go to different parts of the company and you'd have different experiences to get to know other parts of the It's a really cool and smart idea, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially a company, you know, like Disney, very, very advanced and, you know, very culturally rich. And so one of the 3 days was getting to go to Disneyland. And one of the things that you got to experience at Disneyland was they outfitted you into a park character costume based on your size and height and weight. Now, they don't tell you in advance, and they look at you and say, okay, so by my weight and size at the time, they said you'd be great as Mr. Smee.
Oh.
Which is interesting from, you know, Captain Hook.
Yeah.
So I put on the Mr. Smee costume And I will tell you officially and unofficially, because I don't want to get into trouble, those costumes are hermetically sealed. I mean, you are sealed in. Okay. I am a person that discovered I'm claustrophobic.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So that was not a good costume for me. And if you think about it, the Mr. Smee head really was proportionally. So it was literally really close to my face on top of it. So I couldn't go out. Obviously, they're not going to send somebody out who's having a claustrophobic episode. Yeah. So what happened was, I was so disappointed, and I really, really wanted to take part. So I got to put on, and this is very funny if you think about it, I became the White Rabbit from Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
And the White Rabbit's head is much bigger. It's like it's much, much bigger, and it's away from the face. I put it on, and I could do it. So this is the moment. This is when I fell in love with all the park and just the experience of being at the park. Because there's nothing like this feeling. You can't communicate. You can't speak. You can't do anything. You go into the park. And being in as the White Rabbit, I felt so much love from little kids and grownups and guys and gals and everyone just coming over and just wanting to hug or just be close. And I was beaming from ear to ear inside that costume. And I thought, whatever this is the magic that makes Disney so great. And it's specifically Disneyland so incredible. Like, I envy all the people who have that job, who get to go out in the park, because you are really loved.
That's amazing.
It's magical.
That's cool.
Amazing. Well, great segue. When you go to Disneyland on the first day of a visit or just on a day, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? You go left?
Well, you know, it's funny because I go in and I go by, you know, the firehouse and I go by Walt's office, and then I go straight up Main Street. Now, this is kind of one of those things where you share it and, you know, anybody hearing it, they go, wow. Well, I actually got to work at Disneyland, but not work at Disneyland. Two different occasions. One, as a young executive, once a year, we used to go into the park from, if you worked at the studio, you went to Disneyland and you had the opportunity to work as a server behind the scenes and serve the other cast members.
Okay.
I loved doing that. I mean, it was so much fun slinging burgers and, you know, Christmas time and at the Christmas party. It was so much fun. And it's really interesting because that's how you kind of get to know. You see a little bit behind the scenes, like where the magic, how the magic happens. So that was really cool. And the other time that I got to work at the park was when I was at the record company. My first job was at Disneyland Vista Records, which is now known as Walt Disney Records. And part of my job was to find songs for the Disney characters to sing on song albums. And at the same time, the record company was developing a rock band, but it wasn't your normal rock band. I'm going to make reference to something that I hope your listeners will go and check out because they were super cool. But it was almost like the Banana Splits meet the Star Wars Cantina Band. That's kind of what this was. Mm-hmm. And the name of this band, this rock band, was called Helix. Now, for anybody out there that would remember Helix, they actually played that summer every night at the Tomorrowland stage.
Oh.
So, and the reason I bring it up, since you asked the question, when I was working at this, I would work all day at the studio and then I'd drive down to the park at night. And that's when I would turn right. Because I'd go toward Space Mountain and the Tomorrowland Terrace. And that's where Helix was. And it was fantastic because it was a really great way to develop a band and develop an audience for a band and have the band itself get to play in front of a crowd every single night. So It was incredible. I don't even know. I mean, I felt like I didn't sleep at all because I'd like have to work all day at the studio and then run to Disneyland at night and, you know, go till whenever the park closed and then drive all the way home and then get back and do it again the next day.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were some long days.
Yeah. If you ask me what summer that was, I don't remember. I can't. Why? I think my brain's still tired.
I love Googling stuff. And yeah. So like you're mentioning this, so the Halicks played from June 20th, 1981 to September 11th, 1981.
There you go. And I was hired and went to work at Disney in, I think my first week was February 5th, 1981.
Oh, wow.
So if that gives you an idea of timeline. And, you know, by the way, I mean, again, this is something there's a young filmmaker, his name is Matthew Serrano, and he created a documentary on Halix that is so phenomenal. It's on something called Defunct Land.
I think that's
on, you know, Defunct Land?
Yeah.
It's on the YouTube, and Matt Serrano is a talented filmmaker, and he poured his heart and soul into this documentary that I'm also in, actually.
Oh.
And that's how I met him, because he wanted to know about what was my experience in being involved in the creation of that. That's really
cool. We will put a link in our show notes. So if listeners want to check that documentary out to learn more about Halix.
Yeah, I see it right here. It's about an hour and a half long documentary. He does Defunctland. He does a lot of these.
Matthew is actually... Defunctland was the production, the company that put it together, but it's really Matthew's film, and he just does an extraordinary job.
Well, I have to ask part two of the Disneyland entrance question, because it's become quite controversial lately, I suppose.
Oh.
So, or not controversial, but like something that people always want to talk about. Which tunnel do you go in? Do you go in the left tunnel or the right tunnel, or you switch it up?
Wow.
See, I didn't think about this either, but somebody brought it up and they were like, oh, I always go in the right side of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And I realized I always go in the right side of the tunnel. So it was just kind of funny.
Yeah. You know, I think it kind of depends on what I'm doing.
Sure.
Why I'm there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At some point it changed, you know, when you worked when I went as a civilian. Before I worked with the company, you know, I think I had a different experience in going. Everything was just so, you know, mad. It was like, how do I get to anywhere as quick as I can? So that was kind of my goal back then. Mm. You know, nowadays the experience of going to the park is 180 degrees from what I knew.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know what I mean? So it's like tunnels didn't kind of, they didn't matter back then.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then it became less of an issue because if I was working on something, I was heading to in a particular direction. So
sure.
Makes sense. Yeah. Well, since we're talking parks, what's your favorite attraction? So even though this is a Disneyland podcast, you can pick any attraction from any of the parks.
Okay. Can I have more than one?
Of course you can.
Okay. You sound just like Teresa. So,
yeah, nope, that's, I'm the same way.
Well, because this one really surprised, I had, again, I don't want to sound corny, but I had a magical park experience.
Yeah.
And it was during the recording of our Lion King 2 Simba's Pride end title song. We were recording it with two incredible artists, Heather Headley, who everybody would know as she was Nala in the original Lion King.
Yeah.
And she also won the Tony for Aida. Mm. So the major, major talent.
Yeah.
And another recording artist named Kenny Lattimore. And so we recorded that song with the intention it was going to be the end title song on Lion King, Simba's Pride. Okay. That was the name of it. Lion King 2, Simba's Pride. And this was amazing. We got to shoot the music video of the song at the Animal Kingdom in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And the moment of something that was so special was the first time seeing the Tree of Life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It just blew me away. It was so spectacular. And again, the privilege of being at the park at closed in the middle of the night. Oh my God, it was incredible. You know, if we weren't so busy working, I would have liked to have like checked things out more, but you know, and I remember our base station was at the Rainforest Cafe.
Oh yeah.
Which is right near there, you know, and like, that was extraordinary. So I just from a visual moment at a park, seeing the Tree of Life was just unbelievable. But, you know, I have to say, I'm a small world girl.
Yeah.
It's the small world ride will always be. I mean, you know, just from it, not just because of the song, but just because of its message, mm-hmm. you know?
The history is incredible, too.
The history of it is incredible, you know, and of course we've got, you know, the Shermans and mm-hmm. the Shermies. Sherman Brothers, the brilliant songwriting team. You know, it's just it's just an incredible mm-hmm. Ride and experience.
Yeah.
So I think that for me, you know, how could you not love the Haunted Mansion? Okay, how could you not? I mean, during this Tower of Terror was like really fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm such a park fan. You know, I mean, I remember the first time going through Soaring over California and California Adventure and smelling the oranges and the, oh God, there's just so many things about being there that just is, it's, you know, it just, I feel so lucky that I got to experience it when I did and that I still get to experience it. And it's always a new experience. Like I just was there not that long ago and finally got to, you know, check out all of Star Wars land, and that's so cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. I will never forget the first time we were in Galaxy's Edge. We were standing waiting for one of the attractions and it was pretty new. Like it had just opened that year and I'm just standing there looking at stuff. Pigs like, what? I'm like, this stuff looks so old and used, but we know it's brand new. Like it was just messing with my mind how like grimy and like, I was looking, it was a handrail or something that they made look like the paint had, it wasn't, the paint was actually worn, but they made it look like it was. I'm like, this is just unreal that somebody, all these details, it's just crazy.
It's the amount of creativity in there is just, you can see something new every single time.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I just noticed? I call it Star Wars Land. It's like, back in the day when I was working there, I had to know everything by its exact name.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the fact that now I'm free to like just go, I was Star Wars Land. It was so much fun.
Yep.
And I don't have to think about it in terms of, oh, how do we, you know.
Right.
It's
a long something. Name, too.
We used to laugh because when they were doing all the press for Galaxy's Edge and the ambassadors were like doing all these promo things, we always laughed because the ambassador, one of the two ambassadors at the time, would do all these videos and he'd be like, we're so excited for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. Like, and every time he said it, it was the full title. And we met him at the D23 Expo. And I was like, just so you know, we thought it was so funny because you'd always say Star Wars,
Galaxy's Edge.
Like with that, like excitement of it. And I'm just like, nobody's going to call it that. And nobody does. Everybody calls it Star Wars Land. So, you know, just like people call it Pirates, not Pirates of the Caribbean, mm-hmm. or they call it.
Exactly.
Not Millennium. No, I mean, some of these attraction names are massive.
Yeah,
it's true.
So Bambi, kind of what brought you to the Disney company? Like, obviously we heard kind of your story, but like, how did you first start with the Disney company? Where did you kind of begin? You kind of alluded to it already. But I guess what was your background and stuff that put you into that position?
Well, I'm a record store geek. Okay.
Okay.
When we had record stores, remember that? Oh, those vinyl.
They're coming back.
But I mean, it was that back in the day, that's all there was. Mm-hmm. So I used to spend hours and hours and hours in record stores. Like people go to the library, I went to the record store. Okay. So my first job, like cool first real job in my head, was I worked for a record store chain called Warehouse Records.
I know them.
Okay. Well, they're not, I don't think they're around anymore, but anyway, I went to work for Warehouse. They weren't as big as Tower Records, but they were right up there. And then there was another chain called Licorice Pizza. Mm. And those were kind of the big three, if you will. And I thought when I got that job, I was so perfectly suited for it. Now, without knowing it, it was my love and my interest and my passion as a kid growing up. I had a collection of 45s. Remember, yeah. I probably don't even know what that is.
Nope, we know.
Okay. And I loved label copy. I loved album jackets. I love liner notes. Mm. And I love lyrics. And I would never in a million years at the time growing up thought that there was actually a job where that information and knowledge would be useful. Okay. But really and truly, that my love and interest and that led to my seeing an ad in one of the trade publications. There's a little Mickey icon and it said copyright assistant, music publishing, copyright assistant wanted. I answered a want ad.
Yeah.
People don't even know what those are anymore, but you know, because there's so many ways to see. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like LinkedIn. If you saw a thing, you click on it and you apply immediately. That's you know, before LinkedIn, that's why we would have trades that would list the job openings. And I was really nervous. I applied, but I was panicked because it said copyright assistant. I thought, oh, assistant, they're going to want somebody who knows how to type like 100 words a minute. And if I could do 55, 60, I was zooming. And that I didn't want to not get the job because I couldn't type. And I tell the story and I don't want to give it away because it really is in the book. And and it's a special story to me. But I'll just share with you that I called a family friend who I asked if they could let me know, you know, whether typing was going to be an important prerequisite for my job. And as it turned out, it wasn't. And it wouldn't have mattered because my first job was as a copyright assistant in music publishing. And I was in that job for about 6 months. And it was much more of the skill set was for somebody who has good librarian skills, organization. Sure. It was checking, making sure copyright renewals were processed. And you know, I'm grateful for that job because it was like learning that you better cross your T's and dot your I's and, you know, really kind of get to know the business side of music. And that's what publishing really is, kind of. And then I kind of saw where I wanted to be and what I really wanted to do. And I wanted to create the recordings, the music. At the time, the read-along story records were really, really popular. And the cool part of it was they were licensed. If it wasn't an actual Disney film, they would license, like, for example, Star Wars. And we would put out the Star Wars read-along book and records. Mm. Or E.T. as told by Gertie. Or, you know, so being around at that time, I knew I wanted to be over and learn how to make those records. And that's really where I learned the production side of recording. I worked on, I lost count, but at one point I did count because, you know, it's like people do ask you, but I think I probably produced about 60 read-along book and records and worked on song albums, hit song albums like Mousercise.
Oh, yeah.
Totally Mini and Flash Beagle. Yeah. So.
That's incredible. So after your copyright assistant job, what was the next step or the next role for you?
Well, in order to support our song albums, we started to get into, you know, it's like, it's hard to explain, except that if you think of Mickey, Goofy, Donald, Minnie, Daisy, they're kind of like the Disney recording artists. And so they need songs for their song albums. And back then, MTV had just really exploded. And so, and when I say MTV, I don't mean what we know to be MTV today.
Like actual music television.
It was actually music television. Mm-hmm. It was like 24/7 music videos all day, all night. So we started to look at our art, our Disney artists, as recording artists that needed their own music videos.
Yeah.
And so where are you going to get that footage? You know, it's animation. Mm-hmm. Well, we had quite an extensive animation library to look at and draw upon. And I really got into that. And I put together two music videos that wound up in regular rotation on MTV, which was really rare back then for, you know, music. And it was for Totally Minnie, the lead track from the album, and Hey Mickey. And Totally Minnie was sung by an artist named Brenda Russell. And Brenda Russell is kind of now really very well known for The Color Purple, the musical.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yep. And she had a lot of hits in her career. I mean, just an incredible singer and wonderful human being. And then the other song was Hey Mickey. And Hey Mickey was a takeoff parody version of, in a way, of the Tony Basil song, Hey Mickey,
yeah,
which was popular back in the day. So we re-recorded it. And that was sung by an incredible talent, Desiree Goyette. So I put the music videos together. And they got into regular rotation. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking to myself, maybe I need to leave the company to become something more than, because at that point, I had done a lot of song albums and story records. So, you know, it was one of those things where I thought, well, maybe I need to just spread my wings and try to fly and see where it takes me. Mm-hmm. So I left the record company. And I was immediately hired by an independent company that was brought on to produce the Disney sing-along songs. So I never really, in my career, I was never not working on a Disney project, even if I wasn't on staff, right. I was still working. And while I was working on this Disney sing-along songs, I was, you know, the same producer was brought on to work on Disney television specials. I'm pretty sure it was the 50th anniversary of Disney. That was a production that Don Mischer produced, very well-known producer. And I was brought on to work on that project. And one thing kind of led to another. And my former boss at the record company had stayed at the company and had been elevated to, I think he became president of Walt Disney Television. And it included television animation, which was a relatively new division that was started at the company. And we ran into each other literally. And he said, let's have lunch and talk and tell me what you're doing. So I filled him in and he said, well, I've been looking for you because I actually was looking for you because we're starting a new series. And the plan is to have a song in every episode. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow. What's the series? He says, it's for the Little Mermaid. Now, yeah. this was back in 1990, I think, that I was having this conversation. The movie came out in 89. And so I said, I'm in. Yeah. And I was brought on and my title then was associate producer music. So you might see my name on some of those early shows as associate producer music. And then from there, my career just grew and grew, and I started a whole department and had people working with me. And so I actually went back on staff with the company and was there until I left.
Now, you incredible. Quickly went past something, but you, uh-oh. I really would like you to talk a little bit about it, because my childhood, this is a, you know, some of my childhood here, which is the sing-along videos, because yep. I tell you, I remember quite a few of these. So first of all, one of the things I liked about the sing-alongs was if you went and saw the movie in the theater back in the day, for the, you know, kind of like what you're saying with like people who aren't aware of how things used to be, you had to wait sometimes almost a year for that movie to come out on VHS or something to see it at home, like, and own it. Unlike today, where it's like 45 days or some ridiculous thing like that. But
They used to hold them back for 7 years. I don't know if you know that.
Well,
that
was a they had the vault thing.
The releases. Oh, yeah. The vault. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
But one of the ways that you could get the songs and parts of the movie was these sing-along songs, because they'd put it out shortly after the movie came out, because, you know, as almost like a combination promotional thing. And I just remember so many, and I remember a Disneyland one. Like, I think you had mentioned at the Disneyana event, the Haunted Mansion one, I think you said you had worked on, that there was like a sing-along or something with the Haunted Mansion in there. And so talk about that a little bit, because that is a huge part of my childhood.
Okay, so I was involved in the first 7 volumes. By the time they became almost a marketing tool in a way, with what you're saying they were tied to, we were it was a proof of concept thing. If you think about it, when we did the first ones, it was, you know, there was not, it wasn't really tied to anything. And it was, let's see, does this work? If teaching kids, you know, it really is a great tool to teach kids how to read.
Yeah.
And because you're following the words on the screen, you know, and we were trying to develop a way to do that as simply as possible. This is, you know, we're not talking about, you know, everything instant and digital and, you know, all that. This was back where it was a little more primitive. Okay. In the early ones. I think one of the ones, for some reason, You Can Fly stands out. I did that volume. They changed the names and repackaged them over the years. So it's very, very well could be something that you remember was from something earlier that was done. But no, I was there for the fact, one of my favorite songwriters is a guy named Pat DeReamer. And Pat DeReamer wrote the main title theme for the Disney sing-along songs. Mm. I knew Pat from my days at the record company because he wrote the songs for Totally Minnie. In fact, he wrote the main title theme that Brenda Russell sang. So, you know, there's I call them invisible threads in my book. You'll see that there are a lot of them in how my journey has been. Not anything I could have planned, but they were all there all the time. So the sing-along songs, the main title theme was really important. I had to come up with something that was going to explain it and be catchy. And then the process of the reason why I think I got the job was because, as I was just explaining to you, I knew the cartoon, the animation library, because I had been cutting those DTVs. Oh. They weren't called DTVs then, but what became DTVs, those music videos together that went on MTV. And I knew where the music and effects tracks were and the, you know, and all the splits, and, you know, could make suggestions on certain images and things like that. So that's how I got that job, to help to develop them. But a guy named Phil Savinick and Harry Ahrens were the main producers on them. And they brought me in as an associate producer, and that we did 7 volumes. So, wow. Yeah. And you know what's really funny that you say this? Because, and thank you for asking, you know, me to talk about it a little bit, because I often find that out of all the things that I've worked on, that the thing that most people would say, I've seen your name. I know you. Disney sing-along songs.
It's weird, the things that, like, you know, throughout your career, you could have done a ton of cool things and people just lob onto certain things. But those sing-along songs, man, I tell you, I remember them fondly. And I remember VHSs, and I'm sure I wore them out, you know, watching them over and over. And they used to play clips of them and stuff in the Disney stores, too, because we'd go into the Disney store at our local mall and they'd have the little sing-along songs. And, you know, they'd play 30 seconds of one and then switch to another or whatever. But I have fond memories of that. That was really a foundational Disney media memory for me. Now, others make fun of me all the time because I'm not really a Disney movie person. I'm more of a parks person. Yeah. But that's one of the things that I remember from media.
Wait, you know, this is going to, I mean, again, I'm sure your listeners are a lot younger, but just for those who might be
a
little bit older.
All ages.
We do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then I'm not going to discriminate or hold back. What I remember was really kind of cool was I got to meet, and he was involved, he and his wife Ginny were involved in the singing group, the singing aspect of a number of the songs, that the ones that had to be re-recorded, and even the main title theme, was Don Grady. Now, you might not know that name right off the top of your head, but Don Grady was on My Three Sons, the television classic television show back in the day.
Yeah.
So I was kind of excited that I got, you know, back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, got to Oregon. So there are a lot of people that behind the scenes over the years, I just think, wow, you know, they went on to do all kinds of other things. And I like to, that information of who does what is hard to come by. And yeah. that was another reason why I wrote the book. I wanted people to get the credit for the things that, you know, that was something I know. I fought for it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
There were instances where I said, if you don't put the producer who produced the music for that, or who the music supervisor, are people just going to think like there's, you know, little mice working somewhere?
Right. You know? Cinderella's little animals helpers.
Cinderella's little mice, you know, it was kind of frustrating to be able to, I don't mean to pull the woman card, but it was really hard, honestly, being the only woman in the room in a creative capacity. And I had to really, you know, I tried to not let it get in the way of anything, but it was a struggle. You know, I'm not going to lie, you know, and I want to just encourage, especially young women that are interested in a career and especially in the creative side of things, go for it and don't let anybody tell you you can't. Well, because it can be done.
Yeah. And it's important because, like you said, years later, people want, I mean, maybe not the kids watching, but when adults wonder, like, well, who did this and whatever. And it's, as an adult, I find it very interesting to watch credits and kind of connect the dots and be like, oh, I remember that name from this thing. Or, you know, it's just, it's really interesting and it's important to know.
Yeah. Well, one of my bugaboos that I had, and funny, we were at the Disneyana convention. So, you know, that this, one of the folks that was honored is the lovely Stacia Martin. Yes. And oh God, what an incredible woman and great background and things I didn't know. And I've known her, but I didn't know, you know, that was really a thrill, but she has an incredible album collection. You guys remember the, okay. Yeah. Well, she put up an album cover and I went, I produced that. And it wasn't anything that anybody would know, right? And it was the official, the Epcot album with the geodesic dome, you know, okay. And I don't think my name appears anywhere. And I'm the one that put that together. And I was like, look at that.
What a small world, full circle.
I just want to mention, too, that you brought up something that we were at the Marceline event. And we were talking to the Imagineer who is credited with doing the wallpaper.
Oh, Tanya.
Tanya
McKnight North.
And it was very important to her to also talk about people that had not been given credit for things. And in the talk that she had there in Marceline, she went out of her way to be like, look, we worked as a team. It was this person and that person, the other person. You know, maybe I did a sketch that was kind of like this, but I don't know. We did a lot of stuff. A lot of it was collaborative. I can't take full credit for stuff. So you saying that is just kind of reinforcing that, you know, there's a group of folks who have gone through this creative process in our case, because we're in the industry of talking about Disney stuff at the Disney company, and are kind of like, people should be getting credit for things. And we were talking about this earlier, that for a long time, nobody knew who created any of these attractions, right? Yeah. Like, these Imagineers were just kind of hidden figures, but now they're like rock stars, you know?
Right.
Everybody who's a Disney Parks fan, anyway, knows Tony Baxter, knows Joe Rohde. Like, they know these people, but some of the original folks, you know, they had to, you know, it's just, you know, more recently have come out. So I really commend the fact that you're trying to talk about all these folks. And one other thing I really want to commend you on is, you keep saying all these names off the top of your head. I can barely remember any names. So the fact that you're in a conversation, you're just like, oh, this person who's a great this and that, and you're just throwing out all these names. I'm like, I don't know how you do it, but it's amazing.
It is amazing
that you have all of that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you. No, you know, I have friends that tell me that was another thing, you know, and again, writing a book is, you know, writing it down and protecting and preserving. Yes. However, I want to encourage other people to do that.
Yes.
We all think that we're going to remember everything. And we all have a story. Oh, yeah. You know, we all have our stories. And I think that that was part of, you know, like I thought, well, I better really write this all down so that I, you know, don't forget it, you know? And so thank you. I feel like, yeah, I'm glad I did. You know, it's not an exhaustive book. I don't want people to think, oh, this is like a memoir where I tell my whole history and I tell everything I've ever worked on. There's a lot of people, frankly, I feel bad that I maybe left out or I didn't name, but not for any reason other than the fact that that's not what the intention of this book is. You know, it really does go back to the fact that I take no credit for the fact that my name was Bambi and I worked at Disney. It just is what happened to me. Yeah. And, you know, whether it was from birth and getting the name to my best friend's father being, you know, working there and all the things that kind of connected along the way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if I can acknowledge other people and their contribution, I'm glad to. I really am.
Well, and like you said, it's important because once these stories are forgotten, they're lost. And there's so many.
They go when we go.
Yeah. And there's just so many amazing, you know, amazing experiences or things that have happened or little things that people are interested in. But if, you know, if they're lost, then they're just lost. So it's really, well, I love it. I'm so happy that you did this because it helps kind of preserve and kind of let future generations, you know, kind of take a peek behind the curtain, as you said, with your peek with Disneyland. But it's fascinating. It really is.
You know, it's something that was really interesting for me was that within the last 4 years in the process of between the, you know, to get a publisher to publish a book these days is kind of a big deal. And I commend the folks at University Press of Mississippi for saying yes. And people ask me, well, how did you get that publisher? How did you find them? And the fact is that I was interviewed for one of their other books 17 years ago.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful book called Mouse Tracks, which is the definitive book that traces the Disney records from the early days all the way up to, I think, in the early 90s. And that was like a book that was put together, researched. It's got so much information in it. And I was interviewed for that. And when I thought about my book, I thought, well, gosh, I wonder if that publisher is still around.
Yeah.
And actually, Greg Ehrbar, who's the person who interviewed me at the Disneyana convention, he was the author of that. He was the co-author of that book. And so, you know, it's yeah. And but it is really important. Teresa, I'm glad you said it. The protection and preservation of our stories. When we die, they go with us. Yeah. And I was just going to say, 4 years ago, so many of the people I talk about in the book were still around.
Yeah.
And they're not around anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's bumming me out, you know? And that's just... Yeah, I mean, you never know, you know, when we've been all kind of, I think a lot of people have been very affected by Matthew Perry's passing,
from
Friends. And I think you just don't know. And so these, for me, I want to encourage people to write it down and find a place to share it, you know?
Definitely.
I also want to say, looking through the book here, for anybody who wants to read all of this history, it's only a 145-page book, and I did not realize, and I apologize for not realizing this, you have a ton of photographs in this book.
I love that.
So it's 145 pages, but there's a lot of photos, too. So I think you could easily, in you know, a couple days probably, if you committed to it, could get through this book pretty easily. If you're behind or you just want like something that's not a giant, I mean, we have some Disney books that are hundreds of pages long.
Yes, I know. And that's great. I mean, we need them.
Yeah. But this is a great one to kind of get
something
different.
This is a stocking stuffer.
A stocking stuffer. I love it. And I love that you included photos because I think there's something about reading it, but then also reading it and being able to see what it is you're talking about really helps. I mean, for me at least, really helps kind of tie it. And I just, it's much more interesting for me, I guess.
Well, to say there. But, yeah. I'm, That's you're pointing out the nerdy geek in me, because I save every. I'm a collector.
No,
I
like perfect.
You know, that's why we're part of the Disney tribe, is we're collectors at heart.
Yes. Yes.
So if I, you know, the things that I, you know, collected over, I wanted to be able to illustrate or support some of the stories. And I feel very, very fortunate that I was able to do that. And not just, you know, because I kind of, it bothers me. It's not like, oh, well, there's Bambi and she's with another famous person. It's not like that.
Right, yeah.
I wanted it to be something that would be supplemental or support the story that I'm telling. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, I'm glad you appreciate it, because I really love that. I kind of geeked out on it.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think it's great.
I'm with Teresa. I love, like, a lot of times, I mean, even on this interview, you've said things and I've like typed mm-hmm. it into the browser because I want to like see it or be reminded of it or something. And so the fact that people don't have to leave your book to do that, they can just, as they read, oh, there's the picture. I yep. love that. And yep. so
yeah.
I think
thank
that's
you.
A great addition to the book.
I want to talk about, we got to talk about your childhood.
Let's talk about your childhood.
I want to talk about my childhood. My childhood was growing up and watching all of the TV series.
Mm.
And The Little Mermaid was one of them. But then also, of course, like Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, Goof Troop. Gargoyles. My little brother was super into Gargoyles. But yeah, I loved all of
Do you know they're going to make a Gargoyles, I think, a new series or a movie?
That's what I heard.
You hear about that? Based on the original.
There you go. Oh, Tailspin. I was a huge Tailspin fan.
Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Oh, yeah. Rescue Rangers. So many good ones.
Well, you know, at one point in time that we joked about it being the All Duck Network. all the show.
That's true.
You know, and by the way, the creative, brilliant creative guy behind all of that was a guy named Jim Magon, who was my boss, who taught me how to produce records. And Jim, he created all those, the duck shows, you know. I mean, again, there's a whole team of people, but Jim really was. I came in, let's see, I worked, the earliest show I worked on was The Little Mermaid because of the songs and Goof Troop. That was really fun. That was my, and then everything that came after that.
But like, talk
and
about
you mentioned them.
Songs, you know, even though they weren't ones that you worked on. Darkwing Duck, there's so many people that you say that and they instantly, the theme song pops in their head. Music is important because it does, you know, it takes you back to places and it takes you, kind of lets you relive different moments of your life even.
It's almost like smell. You know how you smell certain things and you're taken? It's like you hear a song and it takes you back.
Yep.
Well, you know what's really funny about what you're saying? And I wish more studios would think about this. A lot of shows don't have main title themes anymore.
No, they don't.
And what you're talking about is something we really, you know, our main title themes are usually about a minute. They were a significant amount of time. And if you think about it, I think the one of the greatest theme songs that of contemporary theme songs of the time was Gilligan's Island, because Gilligan's Island told you a whole story about what the show was. And I know that we really tried to, you know, do that with our themes so that they would resonate either musically or lyrically or both, or let the audience know what the show was going to be about. So we took a lot of time and I had a blast casting our theme songs. Like, you know, again, a lot of people, maybe they'll know some of the names, but like, you know, Pat Benatar sang on another Goofy movie and Eddie Money sang Quack Pack. That was another duck. And the main title theme. And Lou Rawls, who is a legend, sang the Jungle Cubs theme. Mm. Oh, Mickey Thomas from Jefferson Starship sang Mighty Ducks theme.
Wow.
So, you know, I got, and again, those were folks that were probably more of my time of, you know, that I, but to be able to get to work with them was, thrill. I feel so, again, just so grateful that I had that experience and that opportunity.
Amazing. And then also my childhood was some of the films that we were talking about before we started the interview. A Goofy Movie has got to be one of my favorites. Like one of my favorites.
James too,
I don't, and again, the music, I like any of those songs. I could just like, it just takes you right back to like sitting on the couch as a kid with your VHS tape going having to rewind it because you're wanting to watch it again. You just can't wait for that little rewind button to go fast enough, you know, all that stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's incredible.
I love the good movie. Mm-hmm. I just loved everything about it. And I love that even today, the two Powerline songs.
Yeah.
I've heard more people re-record and do their own versions of them, which is pretty amazing.
It's in Toontown now. Did you know that? In Mickey's Toontown.
It is?
It's in the background.
Oh, yes. You're kidding.
It is.
Oh, how incredible. Yeah, oh, that's awesome.
You kind of have to really
Last time
listen.
I was there, it was closed.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to go back there and listen because I think it's eye to eye that they have kind of looped in
eye
there.
Eye to eye, of course. Yep. Yeah.
Well, make sure that you go to the little shop after you ride Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, the little exit gift shop, buy a Power Lime. It's like their little candy bar.
It's like a taffy.
You're kidding me.
Power Lime.
A Power Lime candy.
Yeah. It's like
hilarious.
An Airhead, like a taffy candy.
Yeah.
They're really good.
It's real popular.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
That's fantastic. All right. I'm going to have to tell David Z, David Rivkin, who produced the Powerline songs.
There you
go. I saw him recently. We went to the El Cap and we went to see the Goofy movie up on the big screen.
Oh,
it was so much fun. It was so much fun. They had a special engagement for a week.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we went to see it. Yeah. So I'll have to tell him about the Power Lime candy.
It's good. It's good.
Cool.
Okay. Well, I think that if we try to talk too much more, I think people should just go read the book. I think people should just read the book. They can see the pictures.
Thanks.
They can get all of the stuff there.
Yeah. Let's talk about the book process and how did you kind of decide you wanted to do this and then kind of get everything together and talk about the journey that was creating part of your magic book?
We talked a little bit about it earlier, mm-hmm. about the fact that I wanted to find a publisher that would know what to do with it. And since they had already sold and had already put out and published Mouse Tracks, which is still available, by the way, to anybody who wants to have the definitive history of the record company, it was a combination of a couple of things. Again, my belief in, I love stories. I mean, I think stories are so important. Stories can do so much to help and heal people and their hearts and bring joy and all that stuff. And we connect through our stories. And I thought, over the years, I thought a lot about that. And when I would share my stories, other people would then say, well, you had that. And you know what? I saw and I did. And that's just at one point in time, I wanted to just create like a group of people that would come together and just share stories with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want a visual, it's sort of like, let's sit around the campfire. Or, you know, if you think about how certain cultures would use stories and storytelling as part of their communal experience. So that was always in the back of my mind. And then, you know, by telling some of mine, my friends used to say, God, you just have the best stories. And when we used to have something I don't know that I've talked about really was back in the day when we'd get together on Monday mornings for our creative meetings to sit around and tell about what went on over your weekend and all that. And I remember at one point somebody said something like, well, did anybody have any brushes with greatness? And that was kind of how that idea, I used to have more brushes with greatness than anybody else. And it wasn't by design. It just happened. And so, again, about stories, it was like getting those stories, those experiences down on paper. And I sort of collected them over the years. Yeah, when it came down to it, I thought, well, you know, I felt almost driven to like wanting to make sure that this part of, because it is being part of a history of a really incredible company, I didn't want them to get lost. And so that's really why. And again, it's not, in order to make it something that I think people can relate to, it's not like I wanted to write a book about, like, again, it wasn't a memoir. It's not about me, you know, it's about, if you can, and I've said this before, it's like it's told from the point of view of the fly on the wall. The book isn't about the fly. It's about the experience that happened in the, so hopefully I've told some good stories, and that's really how it came about.
Kind of a labor and finding of love that project.
A labor, it really was. It was a labor of, thank you. That's a perfect way of saying it. It was a labor of love. It was a passion project. Mm-hmm. And I love this publisher. I can't say enough. Craig Gill and his team, Lisa McMurtry, if I can just give shout outs to of folks. Course. Courtney McCreary and Steve Yates, all great, great people, very supportive. A lot of their publications are scholarly works. And this isn't necessarily fall into the natural category of that. But yet they took a chance because they have popular culture, and that's really important to them. And this certainly falls into popular culture. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I've done a good job for them as well.
Well, I think it definitely looks like it. And I think I'm sure there's a lot of people in our listeners that will want to pick this up and learn all about it.
So, Bambi, where can people get the book? Where's the best place for them to go order the book?
Okay, so the best place is Amazon. It's you can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it really anywhere you buy your books. And you can get it actually, now, it's on the University Press of Mississippi's website. You can get it anywhere. And by the way, it's available. A lot of people like ebooks. Mm-hmm. It's available, you know, as an ebook.
Very cool.
So you can get it. Yeah, so it's all downloadable. It's all there. I appreciate you guys supporting. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
Of course. And Bambi, if people are interested in following what you're up to, is there some like social media or anything that they should be checking out?
Well, I am not a social media person mm-hmm. by my nature, because having had the name, it's a funny thing, you know? But however, I do have for the book an Instagram account called @partofthemagicbook. So if they go to @partofthemagicbook, I'm really enjoying it. It's an Instagram page that supplements the book. So things that I do talk about in the book, I can show visuals or, you know, and, mm-hmm. and that's also, by the way, that's where I'm going to put the information about this podcast. So it's a way for me to communicate with an audience. And I talk about my mother's love of all things Disney. And I recently found a picture of her with a cutout that they used to have at the parks where they would have the characters. And it said Minnie Mouse at the top. And it said it at Disneyland at the bottom.
Aww.
And she stuck her face through it. And so I put things like that. And I also have Matthew Serrano, mm-hmm. the filmmaker who did the Helix documentary, he actually put together a TikTok. Now, don't ask. I'm not a TikTok my person. But there is actually a Part of the Magic TikTok page. And I will tell you something that shocks me to no end. There are over 1,200,000 views of one of Matthew's TikTok videos of Robin Williams and talking about me in one of the projects that we worked on.
Oh.
So I don't want to give that away, but if people want to go and see a really cool, there's his little TikTok videos are so fabulous. And he convinced me that I should do them. And I'm not doing any more. I'm done. But the ones that are there will live on forever. And they're really fun. So there's one, by the way, there's one on the Disney sing-along songs.
Oh,
which there you go.
You'll want to check out for sure. And there's one on Michael Jackson. There's a couple of part one and part two on Robin Williams. And I'm trying to think of what the other one is. Oh, Idina Menzel. Ooh, I mean, yeah. So I got to see her recently. That was kind of a thrill, because I hadn't seen her in a long time. And you may not know this, and I don't know if people would, but she sang on the Hercules series that we did.
Really?
Yes. Wow. She was a character called Circe. And I think there's a picture of her or something in the on the TikTok video. So anyway.
Very cool. Yeah.
So very, fun very stuff cool. to check out. So those two places people can kind of check out. And if they want to write to me, they can write to me at part of the magic book dealwickly@gmail.com.
And we'll link all the social media and places where people can pick up your stuff on the show notes, of course, like always. All right. It comes down. Now, technically, you already worked at Disneyland or worked at Disneyland, but not for Disneyland. But if you could work at Disneyland for Disneyland, what would you want to do? This could be a real job, made up job. What would you like to do?
You know what? I'd go out in the park as one of the characters and walk around. And I can't think of anything that's better than that. You know,
yeah.
If you want to talk about great people watching, that's a fabulous and just the experience of the it's an instant. I don't know. If just think about how beautiful the world would be if you walked out of your door every day and somebody just like said, I love you.
And ran and gave you a hug. Yep.
Yeah. And ran and gave you a hug. You know,
it is pretty magical for sure. It is something that Disney does very well.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Bambi, so is there anything that you would like to talk about that we did not cover before we wrap up?
Oh, I mean, this was great. You guys are, again, I feel like you're part of my Disney family, you know, of the tribe.
Yeah.
So, and you know, and it's like, I could tell, you know, I love all the things that I'm seeing, by the way. Yeah, I have to say.
Well, thank you so much, Bambi, for spending the evening with us and telling us all about your fun times at the Disney Company and all the different invisible threads that you've had throughout your life. If you would like to follow Bambi, we will make sure to link all of her info in our show notes, as well as where to get her new book, Part of the Magic.
It's okay. I'll be the only weekly tier without an answer. Make sure you send your questions to Producer James or Producer Vern at trivia@doweekly.net.
Well, welcome back to Trivia Land. I'm glad you found us through this construction that's happening next door that you keep reminding me about. But it does smell good.
It does smell
good. I was going to say, they're starting to work on that food over there. It's only, you know, a little over a month away from when we'll have it ready.
Yeah, I just hope there's no entertainment over there, because I think we win by being like the only entertainment in the park.
There you go.
Sure.
Questions I asked you this week. Where in the park can you find the home for Pfeiffer, Fiddler, and Practical? You correctly identified that it is the Three Little Pigs, and their house is indeed one of the miniatures in Storybook Land novels.
He huffed, he puffed, but he didn't blow our house down, Teresa.
Thank goodness. Yeah, you almost talked yourselves into the other side.
We did.
Question number two was an audio clue. This was definitely a coaster kind of rumbling. Maybe you heard an iconic roar from someone named Harold in the background.
Good job, Teresa.
The Matterhorn. Exactly right.
Good job.
Tig, I'm glad you fell into my trap of that kind of could be Big Thunder. So
he lured me in.
I did.
And I fell in hook, line, and sinker.
Question number three came from Elise K. What year was the Sword in the Stone installed? The movie came out in 1963. The attraction, this piece, was installed in 1983.
Woo!
I found it interesting looking at this that Merlin would come out in purple robes, it seems like, instead of the blue that we're so accustomed to.
Telling you,
very interesting.
I need to bring this back.
Why would he come out in purple? Do you know? You said like you had some...
No, like I had seen it.
Give me your encyclopedia.
I don't think they're gonna have a picture of
no, Merlin. But I'm curious to see if they have a reason why it did that. Anyway,
gotta find that king or queen of Disneyland, because of course Merlin would never remember that in the show. Last question for you this week, cast member costume. It's essentially a beige work suit, pants with a belt, matching colored shirt tucked in. Shirt tends to have one or more patches on it as well. If it's colder, cast members can throw on a beige jacket. If it's sunny, some aviator sunglasses make the look. I'm glad you caught on to my last clue, really giving it to you that we are indeed taking off with our good friend Patrick at Soarin'.
Yes.
That good means job. A perfect week for Teresa.
Woo!
Hopefully.
Almost perfect for Tag. Super close.
Very close. He played nice to make sure one of you got a perfect week. Maybe the listeners at home did too. Does that mean we need harder trivia questions?
No.
Well, if you think so at home, send producer Vern and I an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Thank you to our editor, Sidell, for masterfully editing this episode and making sure all the show notes are posted. Thanks, Sidell.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.